when it comes to life, we all understand that there is an ideal that we dream of, and there is the reality that we muddle through. This is true for all of life, including our intimate sexual lives and our family lives. The sexual ideal is beautifully described in the Bible's Song of Songs, a selection of which we just heard Kim sing. Here in this passage, the lover, much like Romeo under Juliet's balcony, the lover is pictured standing right outside the bedroom window and peering into the latticework. And the lover whispers, "Come away with me. Flowers are blooming, turtle doves are cooing, juicy figs are growing." And he means, "Let's do the same. Let's ride this wave. Let's enjoy the fruit of our own vineyards." Nothing is said here in the Song of Songs about lifelong vows. Nothing is said to exclude the love of a man for a man or a woman for a woman. Nothing much is said here in the Song of Songs except, "God, I adore you. Let's make love." The Song of Songs celebrates a sexual ideal. "I am a rose of Sharon. I am a lily of the valley. Oh, my lover browses among the lilies. He's like a young stag on my gentle hills." It's an amazing passage. You can see it. She says, "Dark I am, but lovely. You can savor it. Let my lover come into his garden and taste its fruits. You can smell it." She says, "My lover is to me a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts, and you can touch it. I arose to open for my lover, and my hands dripped with myrrh." No wonder that over 100 years ago, an old conservative Calvinist theologian, he read the Song of Songs and he wrote that the Song of Songs is about the beginning of eternal joy that can already be tasted in one's sex life. Unfortunately, no matter how sweet our own first introductions to love were, if indeed they were sweet, no matter if our lover is as beautiful as Helen of Troy or as handsome as Ryan Gosling, the reality of a lifetime of sexual love rarely lives up to the Song of Songs' poetic climax. You know this. As we grow older, our hormones ebb and the intensity of our passions subside. Our children stay up later, and their busy activities through the day leave us exhausted, and we have headaches. And we want to watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And perhaps our partner snores or has hot flashes, so we move to twin beds and maybe even to another room. And when we stand before the mirror, we realize one day, as hard as it is for us to believe it, but we realize that we are not as impressively sculpted as we surely once were. So the nature of intimacy evolves. We discover that instead of falling into each other's arms and bed, we make appointments. Instead of acrobatics and cuddling, we say hi. Instead of making it, we make tea and spread jam on biscuits for each other. Life is like that. We all dream of the perfect ideal, and some of us may even have a few days or months where some of our ideal is realized. But then life goes on. And often, that's not so bad. You know, our family lives are a mirror image of this ideal and not so ideal. A mix of the ideal and the mundane. We live, even now, all of us, in the heavy shadow of the 50s ideal that we used to see on TV sometimes, Leave It to Beaver and all that kind of stuff. You know, where there's a mom and a dad and there is a son and a daughter, the perfect family. And dad has a good job and mom doesn't work, but she looks after things at home in her beautiful dress. And the eldest son goes off to college to study engineering, and the young daughter snags a boyfriend who has a great future in plastics. In some ways, this notion of being able to have the ideal family hasn't changed much over the years, if we're honest with ourselves. You see, the notion of an ideal, perfect family was then, and still is now, imaginary. The truth is, we all have children, or are children, who struggle in school. We all have marriages or have grown up with moms and dads who had marriages where there's struggle and need of frequent repair. We all know what it's like to be in a family where finances are challenging. We all have family members near or maybe a little further away who struggle with depression or addiction or debt. All of us belong to real rather than ideal families. And from our New Testament scripture reading, we realize that the same is true for Jesus. There's that imaginary ideal family that we kind of think Jesus belonged to. You know, the one that every medieval painter painted? The one with a pretty Mother Mary, with a beautiful haloed baby Jesus on her lap. Madonna and child, blessed forever. What an incredible family. But if the Gospels are to be believed, that ideal is actually imaginary. The truth is that Jesus was born in a stinky stable because Joseph didn't properly plan ahead. And when Jesus starts doing miracles, his brothers refuse to believe them, according to Matthew. And when Jesus starts preaching, drawing a crowd, his mother and brothers are right there, according to today's scripture, trying to take him away, because they think he's crazy. And Jesus' family, in short, they don't believe Jesus is special. They think he ought to keep his mouth shut. They think he ought to go back to the carpenter shop. They think, they would have thought, if we could only institutionalize him, that's what they would have done. So is that all there is to life? You know, that flash in the pan of the ideal? A moment or two of sublime satisfaction in bed and then a long decline. Is that all there is to life? A family occasionally firing on all cylinders, but mostly a family that's just muddling along from one minor catastrophe to another? Is that all there is? One perfect day every year. Mother's Day. But every other day, a rat race, a struggle, a mirage. Oh, I hope not. In fact, I actually don't believe that for a minute. Look, the ideal when it comes to the Song of Songs, it's lovely. But that vision of romantic love is especially lovely when we see it in its context, in a string of pearls where every pearl is lovely in its own way. There is that sexual high that many of us remember and treasure in our hearts and still experience from time to time that has God's blessing, but everything else that goes with romance is lovely too and gives romance structure that allows it to last a lifetime and a beauty that never fades, from holding hands to knowing ahead of time what your partner or friend will say, to being a safe place for your lover to reveal what is truly on his or her heart, to raising children, even going on a road trip together as a family. Real romance, committed, enduring love actually needs a string of all these experiences to bind two people together and sustain them for life. That's true for romance, and it's true for family life too. We all like to portray ourselves as belonging to ideal families. I know this temptation myself, especially as all four of my children are now graduating this year from school, and I can tell all of you how great it is and how good they are. I mean, we all want to do that. And once in a while, all of us are probably supremely happy with what our kids are doing. But the truth is, our families are also all flawed, just as we are personally. You know, kids and parents don't argue, right? But of course they do. And husbands and wives, they have children but can't agree on how to discipline, and then daughters act out and sons choose not to go to the school that we are suggesting for them, and we have to juggle diaper rash and spilled milk and boyfriends that scare us and illnesses that sometimes put the fear of God into us. That's family life. But family life is a large part of the only life we have to live. The moments and the days that we ought to seize, because they are the only moments and days that we will have. And so we have a choice. Do we embrace this moment, even imperfect as it is? Do we embrace it or not? Living for the mythical ideal is a trap. We don't need a red carpet and exploding flashbulbs to enjoy the company of whoever it is on our arm. And we don't have to earn $1 million and finally buy that Maserati to be loved or to love our children. No, each moment we live, even if it is a moment of deep struggle, is a prerequisite for every other moment in the chain of being, including the ideal moments and every other moment beside, ideal or not. It all needs to be embraced as a gift. Of course, when the ideal falls into your lap, momentarily, or even by design because you're very smart, it's a special moment. You know, the lovers in the Song of Songs, they are living the dream. And so no wonder we celebrate it. It is lovely. Dedicate your lives to such dreams. However, live only for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Well, then you will be mostly bitterly disappointed. Today is Mother's Day. We all have mothers. Some of us are mothers, whether it's because we have our own children, adopted or biological, whether it's because we have become a mother figure to someone, maybe because we have disciples, maybe there's crowds of people at work who listen to us and adore us. Today is Mother's Day. And what all our mothers have taught us, if they have taught us well along the way, is that along with all the other beautiful and ideal things mothers may do, they might break glass ceilings, they might be the life of the party, they might become famous like Margaret Atwood or Sophie Gruguère. Along with all the beautiful and ideal things that mothers may do, they all confess that there is nothing quite so wonderful as falling exhausted into bed at the end of the day, knowing that you have done your best, that you have loved those that you are with today, that you have cleaned your child's nose perfectly, that you have made a home, either alone or with a friend. You've made a safe nest for all who love you, and you can sleep. This living in the moment, living for those you are with, living for those you are with, even in the toil and trouble of a real life, this muddling through, is what it sometimes takes. This is doing the will of God that Jesus speaks about in our text. And ultimately, it is what makes all of us, mothers,